What up, Conquer Nation? Thank you so much for tuning in. Today is a little bit different episode, something I've been wanting to do for a long time and just haven't been able to put it together. But today I am joined by Brandon Malott, and he was on another podcast a couple months back. So I will put that tag to that one in the show notes, but give you a little quick background on Brandon. He's a stud at riding bicycles real fast and all disciplines. So he won three different national championships last year in three different disciplines. So the guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to riding bikes and getting fast doing it. So Brandon has started a coaching business in the past year. B-Money Racing is how you can follow him on Instagram. I think that's the only place he does stuff. He may do it on his Facebook as well, but check him out on Instagram, check him out on Facebook, get in touch with him. He is the one that's actually trained me and coached me for, he did my cycling plan for my cyclocross this year, which I have seen the best bike fitness of my life on and made huge gains super fast. But today we are answering your questions. We had several questions that were submitted, and we definitely want to do more episodes like this in the future because I think it gives really good feedback and gets you the information that you want and that you're needing for your personal training. So if you have questions, we will be doing another one of these in the future, hopefully in the near future. And so send me any questions that you have related to triathlon, running, swimming, nutrition, weight training, any kind of cyclocross, mountain biking, any of that stuff, send it over to us. We need more information and more questions for future podcasts and future episodes. So you can send that over to ryan@conquertraining.com by emailing. You can hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. Both of those are Conquer Training. And I would love to hear any feedback and questions you have and how we can help you become a faster endurance athlete and a stronger endurance athlete. Also, shameless plug is creating some strength training and mobility programs that are ready to roll. And we actually talk about strength training. That's one of the questions that we cover in this episode. So we have those. Contact me. Again, it's on Instagram or Facebook. You can send me an email and we talk. And I'm doing them extremely inexpensive this year, and I'm just trying to get them out there so I can get some feedback from you, how we can make them better. But every endurance athlete, no matter what your discipline is, you need to be getting stronger and you need to be moving better. And so I'm trying to put some programs together that are specifically for triathletes, specifically for people that have never been in the gym before, want to do it at home, who are cyclists or just runners. So I'm just trying to, it's going to take some time to build out all these programs, but I need your feedback and your help. And so please get in touch with me and let me know, and we'll get these programs out to you because I need some feedback, and we need to make them better. We also need to make you better and make you a better athlete. So get in touch. Hope you enjoy this episode. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening at now. Give us some feedback on what you like, what you don't like, and be able to please make sure that you're giving us some reviews. Hopefully they're 5-star reviews, but if they're not, I would love to hear what we can do to make this these episodes a little bit better for you. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please subscribe because that helps us get more listeners out there and more people finding ways to become a better endurance athlete. So thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoy this Ask the Coaches with me and Brandon at B-Money Racing on Instagram. And can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks. All right, Brandon, we're up and rolling. And today we are going to do something different and something we haven't done before. But hopefully we can make this a regular occurrence because I think it'll be good for us and good for some athletes that are out there. We're going to do Ask the Coaches. And we got in 5 questions today to go over. And we'll just kind of ping pong back and forth and see what our ideas are, what our suggestions are for these athletes, and try to help them with what their problems are. So you ready to roll?
Perfect. Let's do it.
Cool. All right. The first one comes in from Taylor. How do you incorporate other types of fitness into your base training period? I want to start running more and do a half marathon in April, but I'm riding 3 to 4 times per week. How do I do both? So right now it's, middle of November. And he wants to do a half marathon in April, which is the Oklahoma City Memorial Half Marathon. He is currently doing cyclocross. The luxury is we know who these people are, so we know a little bit of their background.
Right, but, right.
He's currently doing cyclocross. He's a Cat 4, I think.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so
he's got the best dismount and remount in Oklahoma City right now. I saw him at all the practice races. I was pretty
impressed.
I was pretty impressed for sure. Yeah,
good. Maybe that's why he whoops me.
He's been practicing. He's pretty efficient at it.
At the mount dismount?
Right.
It's probably because he had a really good triathlon coach back in the day.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. It absolutely has to do with that.
I'm sure. So let's talk from your, because you bring such a cycling background to these questions, and I bring the triathlon side to these questions. So it'll be interesting to see what our different thoughts are. So what are your thoughts for Taylor first off?
Well, if I was going to coach anybody that was doing both of those things, riding 3 to 4 days a week and still keeping cycling fitness to take into the spring and then also training for a half marathon, I mean, the first thing I would do is I would make sure everybody's on board with understanding, like, total accumulation of stress on your body. I don't know exactly the thought process behind the half marathon training. I mean, it's 13 miles. I mean, what's that? For like your average dude, like two and a half hours.
Right, 2 hours roughly.
And you don't really get to those long types of runs until like within a few weeks out.
Right.
Is that right?
You'd be about the last, you know, your last probably 8 weeks is you're ramping up into that 8 to 10 mile mark, somewhere in that area.
Okay. And, you know, but with one of those days being like probably 80% of the total distance.
If his longest run was 10 miles and that was like 2 weeks before the race, he could finish the race no problem, no injuries.
Okay.
Come across the line healthy and happy.
So something like that would overlap right now with what you'd be doing, you know, not necessarily in cross season, but coming out of cross season and doing a base season, you know, a big 4 to 5 week block or two blocks through like January, February, into March, doing a lot of endurance and then ramp that up to the next zone of tempo and then ramp that up to the next zone of, you know, sweet spot threshold. So you could do all of that at one time as long as you were understanding the accumulation of total stress from both activities, right? And then also incorporating 1 to 2 mandatory days of just exceptional rest.
Right.
Right.
And you're saying, and you measure that with, because you use Training Peaks, that's what I use.
I use Training Peaks.
The TSS score.
Yeah. So, yeah, Training Peaks has their own algorithm. Uh-huh. You know, they have an algorithm for if you're doing power-based training, and they also have an algorithm for if you're doing heart rate-based training, right? Which heart rate is so variable that you can't always go by that. But I find it really funny because that's like literally one of the only ways to gauge running or swimming or like working out in a gym or like rowing or something like that, which are like some physically demanding activities. Mm-hmm. But the only way to gauge how much stress you're putting on yourself is by a heart rate monitor. Whereas in cycling, I actually personally know a lot of coaches that won't even coach you if you're not training with power.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like that because I feel like, look, if I'm giving you workouts to do and you're doing them and we're growing from them, then I really don't even care what the power numbers say half the time. We're getting better.
Right.
Or you're getting better, right? We're learning something. We're doing something, right?
Yeah.
You know, because there is so much heart rate variability.
Well, and I saw a thing the other day Siri, she coaches a bunch of the world champion triathletes. She doesn't like power, heart rate, anything. She's all about perceived effort. I mean, she was a world champion. She coaches world champions.
Right.
That's just how she coaches.
Yeah.
It's all on perceived effort.
Yeah, and I mean, I do that with some of my athletes too, and it's.
Because someday that power meter ain't going to be working during a race, that Garmin's going to die, and you got to be able to know what 85% feels like.
Yeah. You got to know how long that you can stick an effort to get to the next move that you're going to or sprint off the front of a race or whatever it is you're doing, whatever tactic you're doing. You have to know the effort that you can hold to successfully
what that
do
feels
that.
Like
and what it feels
like.
Right. Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
So with Taylor wanting to do some running, how would you say you would structure his week with like key rides? He's going to be running some, like what's important, and it's base training, so we got to remember that is in the equation too. So
yeah,
what do you feel like how he should structure his weeks?
Well, that's my other question, like what how many hours, like the first like 2 months, would he be running a week?
So the way I'm looking at it, because there's a couple things we don't know here with this question. We don't know what his goal is for cycling. We don't know if it's he's doing the road races, which are early in the year. We don't know if he's going to be crit focused.
Right.
So what his main A race is going to be in cycling, I don't know. I'm guessing he's probably going to do what he normally does, and it's going to be based, you know, he usually does the crits in the summertime.
You kind of race up into the Pro-Am and Tulsa Tough weekend and then call it
Which is June, right?
Yeah, it's early June. You so call guessing, it a day after that because it's a million degrees.
I'm guessing that's probably what he's going to do.
Sure.
And he's got a baby on the way. So
is that public?
Well, it is now.
Okay.
Hope so, Taylor. Good luck.
Sorry, dude. You heard it here first.
Yeah, you're welcome. And so things in his life are going to change anyways. So my view at looking at this is he's going to have, what's the most important thing? Is the run the most important thing this time of year, or is the cycling the most important thing?
Yeah.
And though that workout needs to take precedence over the other. If he's riding four times a week, he needs one day completely off of everything. Yeah. So that gives him 2 days that he can just run, and one of those can be his long day. One of those can maybe be because he's getting intensity back and forth on the other things. So one of his other run can be just a tempo day of just, you know, you're going to go out and do 5 miles smooth effort, maybe some fartlek runs inside of there.
Sure.
And then he's going to have he can do one other run day. He can do that he's just going to have a double up on a bike day. It's kind of what I was thinking. So he's going to have one day where he maybe.
But that run would be short that day.
Yeah, maybe that day at lunch he goes and runs 30, 40, 45 minutes.
That sounds long.
And then one of his runs is an hour. That's his, you know, his tempo day. And then his long run starts at wherever he's at. Let's just say he's starting, you know, at 5 miles, and he just builds that up to a 10-mile day, and he's done.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking. But how would you structure?
I think on that same plane, like, you do that, and then just depending on what the goals are with cycling, you just, you know, through base season, obviously you do 1 or 2 days with cycling, preferably on the weekend, that are a 2 to 4 hour ride. Because a 2 to 4 hour ride won't build near the same amount of stress as a 2 to 4 hour run.
Yeah.
I mean, a 4 hour run seems like the worst possible thing you could do.
Yeah,
I run once a week for 15 minutes when I'm in cross season, and it's like, I literally have one speed. What it is it's really, really hard, but it's not very fast, but it really hurts really bad. Yeah. And 15 minutes is about all I can muster.
Yeah.
So I think for somebody like Taylor, I think you would gear, because he's had so many years of cycling experience,
right,
and he's got that at adaptive fitness already with his body. I think you would focus it more towards doing the run as the primary focus, and then maybe supplement if he wanted a little intensity. Say, hey, this week you can do this group ride, because it gets kind of intense, but most of it's like zone two. Mm-hmm. Most group rides are not very hard for the most part. They're just the fast. I mean, going fast with 40 people isn't very hard.
Right.
Right. It's just, you're just going
fast. It's hard
fast
on a few climbs and.
That's it. Like, it's a zone two ride. Right. Like, it's 40, 50 TSS an hour. Mm-hmm. It's not that big of a deal. So I would say incorporate some of that, just depending on what he wanted his early season cycling to look like. But it's hard. I mean, just like with anything, it's it would be very, very difficult to run, you know, an hour and a half, hour 40 half marathon and be a Cat 1 crit racer at the same time.
You got to pick
one or the other, right? Like, it's going to be extremely difficult.
Right.
We have some local guys that are like great runners,
right?
And like, I was coaching a guy last year, and we were training for an endurance race. And then he tells me, he's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm training for the marathon, too. And I'm like, you didn't tell me that.
You got to pick one or the other.
You didn't tell me that. And he's already a great runner. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you don't need to be running that much, because you're already a good runner. You need to be riding more. And it just didn't work out.
You have to pick the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal. You know, and if you're riding to supplement just because you like to be on your bike and having fun, that's how I am pretty much every time I ride. So I would do that just for fun.
And I think you nailed it, talking about the stress, looking at the overall stress. You're gaining overall fitness doing both. So use the bike as your recovery days,
sure,
because it's no impact,
yep,
and you can spin it out. So I would probably do your hard run, long run, before you're off, or like, and follow it with the easy hour spin.
Absolutely.
You know, and that way you're spinning out the soreness, so you're not just sitting on that soreness, like doing your hard run on Saturday, off on Sunday, and easy spin on Monday. I would maybe do that easy bike right at the day after that really long
exactly
ride.
The day after, yeah.
I think that's how it's structured.
Absolutely.
All right, so hopefully that helped Taylor. If we let the cat out of the bag, yeah, that's Brandon's fault.
And congratulations.
Yeah, good job, proud of you. All right, the second one is, I question my body when I need to rest versus needing to keep with the process. I left out the heart rate. How can I utilize my resting heart rate to determine these situations? So, heart rate question, this is coming from Ryan. Not me, different Ryan. So
Ryan with an I.
It's cute.
He's a precious man.
He is. He's a beautiful man. So what's your take on heart rate and resting heart rate? Do you use it for you?
Yeah, I actually do use it all the time. I know my resting heart rate is low when I get off my couch and I feel like I'm going to pass out. I pay attention to it every day.
Uh-huh.
I don't necessarily look at my heart rate when I'm training, but okay. I think two things. I think knowing what your resting heart rate is, right, and then understanding that it changes depending on your fitness level, right?
Agree.
So if you're not riding a ton or doing as much intensity, it's going to be a few beats higher. And if you're totally slacking and you take off 3 months, it's going to be like 10 to 15 beats higher, right?
Right.
Like, I'm 35 years old, and probably across the board for people in my demographic and my age that are just not athletic like me, their resting heart rate's probably in the 70s.
Probably, right? Yeah.
My resting heart rate was 37 this morning,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm pretty fit right now. So to answer this question is, if I was to wake up and I had a big intensity day, which I went out and knocked out 5 laps at Bluff, like pretty hard. My heart rate average was like 160.
It's pretty high.
For that whole time. That's pretty good. Good hard zone 3, like high zone 3 ride.
Yep.
Right? I know today, because my resting heart rate was low, that I'm going to have a better chance of
taking on that stress.
Right. And then my body being able to recover from it. Right.
So if you wake up tomorrow and it says, and you're unmotivated, right? You don't feel like you want to do anything.
Right.
But your resting heart rate is still 37.
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Well, some people, like maybe Ryan included, will train through that.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, I'm not the kind of guy that likes to do that.
But your body says you can.
My body says I can, right? And then you don't want to miss a good training day from a back-to-back training day because you build so much good positive stress and good fitness from that.
Right.
Going back-to-back-to-back, you know? Because if you can get three, you want to turn that thing?
No,
if you can get three awesome days in a row in the middle of the week,
right?
Man, you're killing it, dude. Like that's like fitness build 101 right there. Man,
yeah.
You're gonna
and I think
that.
The thing is with looking at your resting heart rate or knowing, man, I feel like crap today and I don't want to do anything, should I or should I not? You got to know what your baseline is,
yeah.
Like exactly what you said. So right now, you know, your baseline is always high 30s,
right?
Is kind of where you're at. And if you wake up and you're at 47, yeah, maybe today is a day off or a really easy hour.
Dude,
spin.
If I was at 47, I would not, it would have been like a 400 TSS day, like after land run last year or something. Right. Like the next day,
uh-huh.
I'm like,
but
yeah,
that's
I feel
what
like
your indicator
junk.
Is.
Right. So kind of on par with that, if I prescribe somebody back-to-back workouts, right,
mm-hmm.
and the first day, like on Tuesday, normally we do hard workouts Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday
mm-hmm.
in some form of variation, right? If I prescribe that on Tuesday and then on Wednesday they go out and they're like, yeah, my resting's low, but my motivation is low,
mm-hmm.
but I'm supposed to do this workout, I'll say, okay, start the workout, see what your power numbers hit. This is where power really plays a difference. See what your power numbers hit. If you're doing VO2 work, if you're getting your VO2 numbers, then keep going.
Suck it up.
And if you're not, and you can't even turn the power, and you're like 20% less in power, then you need a recovery day.
Yep.
So that, to me, would be the deciding point and the number one reason to buy a power meter or have something like that so you could actually gauge that based on your power.
Agree.
Like, and that's also a negative thing, like when you're in a race.
Right.
And you're like, well, today's the race day. My resting's low. My motivation's kind of low.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to go race. Well, if you start looking at those power numbers, excuse me, in the race, and you're like, crap, I'm only 80%.
And it feels like 110.
Yeah, you might mentally check out.
Yeah,
but with that situation, I mean, I would say race through it. And sometimes with the situation in training, train through it.
I agree.
But I would gauge it on, okay, if you did that last week, then and it made you feel like crap for 3 days, then don't do it again next week, right?
Right.
Because we don't want you feeling like crap for 3 days. A training program shouldn't include that.
Right.
Unless you're at the end of like a big endurance block, you're gonna feel pretty fatigued. Because like the stuff that I do, you're gonna be getting into the mid-20s to upper 20s hours worth of workout, you know, 25 hours a week at the end of a big block. you're gonna be pretty tired. I mean, that's more than a part-time job.
Your heart rate should be high. Right. Your resting heart rate should be
high. Yeah, it will be high.
Yeah.
But then you need 3 to 4 to 5 days of recovery, not necessarily a quote-unquote recovery week, because a week, 7 days is too long.
I think everybody's different.
Yeah,
depending on
different.
Age and how they recover naturally.
And the situation's different.
Right.
Depending on the intensity.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think that's the biggest thing that a lot of, especially type A, you know, people that I see is they think that their training plan is like locked in stone. So just like you said, going out and you wake up, you look at your resting heart rate numbers, you look at everything and it says, man, I should be able to go do this. You go try it. If it sucks, then you stop. Like, but some people just bury themselves by continuing, and maybe it doesn't show up the next 1 or 2 or 3 days, but it shows up 3 weeks later when it matters more than ever. So paying attention to your body, but understanding that motivation comes and goes.
Uh-huh.
You're not always going to be motivated to go do a workout, even though your body is ready for it. And knowing those baseline numbers. So I like to say, you know, to find your resting heart rate, you know, track it for 5 to 7 days every day, mark it down. It's going to give you a close number, you know, and then just kind of base it off of that and just watch it as you go. If you wake up in the morning and you feel tired, throw it on and look at it. If you're not a person that likes to look at stuff all the time. I am not a person that likes to, I like looking at the details from my athletes. I hate doing it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I've bought a strap where I just wear it and it tells me every single day.
That, perfect. You got like a Fitbit type deal.
It's called Whoop. Yeah.
Okay. And it's a similar deal.
And it tracks everything.
I actually want to get one of those because does that track your depth of sleep like the Fitbit stuff does?
Yep.
Track like the different zones of your sleep. Like
your
that to me
cycles,
is super, super.
And your HRV. And I think the HRV is the most critical. So if you can, there's so many devices out there that do it now. And there's an app that does, and I think it's like $5 or something, Sweet Beats or something like that. And you do it with your heart rate monitor strap, and it pairs with almost all of them. And it gives you an HRV. But I think the HRV is more important than the heart rate, if you can do that, because it goes through your nervous system. And it'll tell you what kind of stress is going on in your life, and it gives you a score, and it's the variabilities between your heartbeats. And so it's a little bit more in-depth and detailed to give you a true fatigue score compared to a resting heart. It just kind of takes it to the next level. So if you don't have that, know what your resting heart rate base is and go accordingly. Just because you're not motivated in your head doesn't mean you shouldn't go out and do it. Sometimes you just got to suck it up and deal with it.
Yeah, sometimes you're just kind of being a wuss.
Yeah,
I
agree.
You just got to deal with it. But I always say, I would say get out there and try it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm like that. I get out there and try. I'm like, man, I'm just not hitting my numbers. Guess we're going to go find a coffee shop to ride to today.
And sometimes you hit them and you just perk up and you have a great workout. And
exactly.
You just move on.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
Cool.
So let's move on to the next one. So this one, I do triathlon and looking to tackle the double at Land Run this year. I have never done strength training and don't know where to even start. So the Land Run double, for people that don't know, is brutal. It's a 50K trail run, but it's on dirt roads with lots of elevation on a Saturday, and then Sunday it's 100 mile ish gravel bike on the same roads, lots of elevation.
Yeah.
It's a grind. Looks miserable. So
yeah, I think I'm busy that Saturday.
Yeah, I have things.
Yeah,
probably. I'm assuming I do. But Robert has never done strength training, so I know you're not strength training guy, but you do yoga.
Man, I should be a strength training guy.
You should be.
I'm missing the boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get them curls going for the ladies.
Work those biceps for my lady.
But you have, but you've done yoga in the past and use that as your strength training.
Sure.
Which
I do a lot of core. Yep. I try to do as much core as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I've been slacking on it a little bit lately.
Mm-hmm.
Been kind of busy, but there's no reason to not be able to do core at your house. You don't have to buy a membership. You don't have to buy any equipment. Maybe a yoga mat if you don't want to be on your carpet or rug or tile floor or whatever.
So where did, well, you have the luxury of your wife being a yoga instructor.
Sure.
But where would you start, like basic moves that you would recommend and say, these are the 2 or 3 things that you need to do that can give you a start?
Yeah. So some of my favorite things to do, like, I mean, I think planking is a pretty, pretty valid exercise. You know, I think doing a proper plank.
Right.
Once you figure out how to do a proper plank,
mm-hmm.
right, keeping your back in line, you know,
right.
keeping your elbows slightly bent, like, I think that, so that's kind of a fundamental of yoga, you
mm-hmm.
know, you get in and out of a lot of different moves with the plank variation, and
mm-hmm.
there's like a million plank variations,
right.
leg up, arm up, leg through.
You can make it as hard as you want.
You can make it as hard. You can hold it for 10 seconds. You can hold it for an hour if you're right. Like super awesome, which I'm not that
no.
cool.
Mm-mm, that sounds
but
awful.
But that would be great if I could do that, just watch TV and do that. So I would say start doing planks. I think Superman exercise is really nice. It's basically where you're laying on your belly and your arms are extended in front of you and your legs are extended behind you. And you contract your back muscles by lifting up your arms and legs at the same time. You can do it as repetitions, or my favorite is just to do it and hold it mm-hmm. as long as I can. I'll hold it for like 30 seconds mm-hmm. and then retract and lay down, basically just right. same position on my belly for 5 seconds, and then hold it for 30, and then, you know, that'll really contract those muscles, you mm-hmm. know. And you utilize so much of your back and your core in cycling.
Right.
And if you're not doing exercises like that, you're missing the boat, because I guarantee that in an endurance activity, you're not overriding your legs. You're not overriding your lungs.
Agree.
Right? You're overriding weak muscles in your body. And your form on your bike is terrible at a certain point, and you're not even utilizing the muscles you should be using. Like, I pedal with my back. Like, watch right. Peter Sagan ride his bike, right?
The power transfer all the way through the body
is ridiculous.
And
he's got such a stiff, strong back. Like, mm-hmm. I look at that dude's back, and I'm like, man.
Kind of a little bit man crush?
Total man crush. I'm like, this guy is the shit.
Right.
Like, this guy knows what's up, you right. know? And there's a lot of people that have more of this power stance like that nowadays, mm-hmm. you know, and incorporate that kind of training. So, to answer the question, 3 exercises, planks, Supermans, and then obviously you want to do some sort of core, like ab type workout, like mm-hmm. not necessarily sit-ups, but in yoga they have this one, it's called like a half boat to full okay. boat. It's where you're like,
Google it.
Yeah, your butt's basically planted on the ground, and then you basically stretch out like you're gonna lay down, but you don't touch your back and your feet down, and then you halfway lift back up, and you're basically contracting your core the entire time.
Okay.
You know, to engage your core the entire time, and they're mm-hmm. absolutely brutal. And some of these yoga instructors are like ridiculous. Like, you'll be in there, you'll be like on your fifth one, and they're like, they've done like a million that day, and they're not even sweaty.
There's,
you know,
nothing more humbling than going to a yoga class. I've only been to a
Bro,
few in my life.
It's crazy.
And you look at it over at this fragile 80-year-old lady who's not even twitching, and you are sweating and
right.
shaking. And
you got all these muscle striations of like muscles you didn't even know you had in your legs.
Uh-huh. And
like,
grandma,
I think I got these crazy strong legs. I look down there, and it's like I got little snakes under my skin. They're just yeah. like vibrating and striating or whatever.
And you're like 4 minutes in.
Oh, yeah. Not even yeah. 4. I'm like 4 seconds in. I'm like, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's awful. But I think people can overcomplicate it, but I mm-hmm. think every single endurance athlete has to do strength training.
Yeah.
They have to. There's tons of books. There's tons of online resources that you can get for free. But I think everyone has to. And it can be as simple as like, pick 3 to 5 moves to do in your living room, and takes 15 minutes 3 times a week to do it, and you're gonna get so much better. But I think it's not only the strength training component of it. That's why I like yoga for athletes, is because it's the range of motion that we suffer from so much.
Right.
So running, your ankles and calves and stuff just get locked up. Cycling, it's going to be your hips.
Your hip flexors,
man. Your T-spine, because yeah. you're just kind of locked into one position, and everything we do is on one plane. It's going forward. So I think we need to do some rotational things. I think we need to do some things like side to side, especially if you want to get off the road and run trail or do mountain biking. I think you really got to work the full body, because like cyclocross and mountain biking, if you're not strong in your whole body, it's not going to be pretty.
No, I agree.
And I think it's not only just a performance aspect, but it's a injury prevention aspect. So there's tons of resources out there. I think if you're a runner, a great book that I would recommend is Kelly Starrett's Ready to Run, because it's not only it's movement practice stuff and foam rolling. And cyclists probably could benefit a ton from his from that book and from his Supple Leopard book, because you can say, oh, cyclists, it's all quad dominant. So they think, oh, this hurts, but it's not because, it's because your quads are tight, not because your lower back's tight. Or injuries show up in other places and come from certain things. So
right.
find a good resource like that. There's lots of apps that you can get stuff as well. But I think just start with a few basic movements.
So I'm gonna just add to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think start with something that's 100% manageable and build from there.
Agree.
Like, find a 5-minute routine you can do twice a week, and then that turns into a 10-minute and a 15-minute, And then maybe you do it 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes, you can find 15 minutes in your morning.
Yes.
Before work to do this.
Right.
And it starts your day right. Mm-hmm. It's perfect way to get your mindset right. And, you know, that's like the biggest thing. Just make it manageable.
Agree.
And then grow from there.
Make it something that you're going to do.
Right.
Because whenever I go to the gym, I love the gym. I love it. So
I've known this about you for years.
And now my favorite move right now is a hex bar deadlift and a box squat. But if you've never gone to the gym, that's not what I'm going to start you with, right? We're going to start with some glute bridges. We're going to start with body weight movements. We're going to make sure that you can move through those movements the correct way.
Just give me the 3-pound weights and I'll just walk around doing something.
You and Jane Fonda, put your headband on and get with it. All right, let's go to the next one. We've got 2 more questions. All right, with so many disciplines of bike racing running seamlessly into each other, how do you balance event-specific training? And most importantly, how do you choose when and how long to take a break? How much of a break does your body need? From Steven. And I'm going to let you kind of answer most of this, and I'll chime in from a triathlete and standpoint.
Yeah. So that kind of goes back to kind of part of the question that Ryan had asked earlier.
Because with cycling, it especially here in Oklahoma, I mean, you have your crit season, or your kind of a road season, or is early. Then you have crit season, and then you kind of start into, like, really kind of into mountain biking and cross, and mountain biking kind of goes off in the spring as well. I mean, like, it's always a season.
Yeah,
of something.
And I mean, in the summer, like, you got to think, like, all the mountain states, all those guys are riding mountain bikes and road racing and all that through the summer. So, you know, and if you race in Texas, like we do a lot, then there's actually a couple weekends in January, if you go look at the USAC schedule, where you could do a 100-mile gravel race, a crit, a cross race, or a mountain bike race pretty much in one weekend, depending on where you're at in the state.
Right.
Because a lot of those seasons, they just keep going, you know?
So how do you balance? Because you, well, for people that don't know, I mean, you won 3 national championships in 3 different sports last year.
Yeah.
I mean, in mountain bike, in cross, in cyclocross, marathon nationals on mountain bike.
And then a gravel.
And the gravel.
Yeah.
So how do you balance all 3 of those seasons?
So, yeah, they're obviously...
And peak.
They're obviously super difficult to train for. The peaking part, I'm still trying to figure that out.
Right.
I think it's
a moving
it's
point.
It's different for everybody, and it constantly changes. And so, yeah, to do all the high-intensity stuff for cross, you know, through cross season, obviously you're going to have a little bit more emphasis on high-intensity and skills work, and then maybe add in, like, 1 endurance day, right? And then as cross starts to come to an end, then you kind of drop back the intensity a little bit, add a little more endurance to get ready for more of the endurance stuff, right?
Okay.
But my ultimate goal this year was, this was like my plan from the beginning. I was like, I want to win this cross championship. I want to win this gravel thing or do as much as I can. I had to go back and do the single speed mountain bike marathon national championship because I failed out it the year before through an injury.
Right.
And then I really wanted to have like a really good crit season, right? And take that into July.
Right.
And I just absolutely was not capable of it.
Right.
I just couldn't do it. My motivation was gone. My fitness was okay. But I kind of found the tipping point, right?
Right.
You know, for me, it's like I can go for 6 months really hard, and whatever's in my way, I can train for that stuff by doing a little bit of everything all the time with constant monitoring of the stress I'm bringing in and my motivation levels, right? And then, you know, just having these big ramp ups, right? You know, a little downtime and then ramp up right before the big races.
So you kind of would do like your build up towards, let's just take these seasons. So cross nationals, okay, we can take last year an example. You would kind of do a big ramp up towards cross nationals. So that was however many weeks of a block.
Yeah, so I actually quit training for cross nationals. I didn't do any intensity after the middle of December.
Okay.
And cross nationals last year was in the second week of January.
Okay.
They've since moved it up 4 weeks to the second week of December.
Okay.
But yeah, I read an article in December last year about how you do this big ramp up for cross, and I had so much intensity and so like such a high TSS. I was doing like 20-hour weeks like in October, November, and then I had 2 really good UCI races at Garland and at Ruts and Guts. I had great results, and then after that I just kind of leveled out. I kept my fitness sharp by incorporating intensity,
right,
but on a 50% scale to what I had been doing.
Right.
And I just decreased my riding to like 8 hours a
just
week.
Just had a long taper.
Yeah, I had a long taper, but right. I did a lot of skills riding at zone two. And what intensity I did it by myself. And I did intervals that I normally would have done prior in the training season, mm-hmm. but I did them at 50%.
Duration. Yep.
Yeah. So if it was like a bunch of Tabatas, I just did half of them.
Right.
If it was 20-minute thresholds, I just did 10-minute thresholds. Right.
You just kept everything sharp.
Just stayed sharp.
You weren't continuing to raise the fatigue.
No, because you're not going to grow fitness at that point.
To a certain right.
Right. Yep. Like you're just going
to
get tired.
It takes time for an interval to sink in to come out on race day.
Yeah, it takes a few weeks. Sometimes it's 3 weeks. Sometimes it's 3 months.
Right.
It just depends on what you're training for, how much stress you have,
so
and what you're doing.
You basically got your recovery leading into nationals.
Right.
Race nationals at cyclocross.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of that and just ramped up your distance because you had the intensity already from that, and then increased your distance going into mountain bike.
Yep. So just increased my endurance, still added some intensity. Did well some gravel races, did well some local regional road races and crits,
mm-hmm.
and then just raced my mountain bike a bunch because I really enjoy that. And then early May won the single speed marathon national championship
race. And then when was gravel nationals?
It was in April.
So those two kind of were together.
So those two were together. Now, for most people, those are going to be kind of different, different training, you know, but for me, I think I just trained a lot on the gravel for my mountain bike stuff.
Right.
Where most people, I would have them do a lot more mountain bike trail riding, but I get kind of burnt out riding our trails all the time. So if I don't mix it up, then I'll lose motivation just because I'm not mixing it up.
And I think it kind of goes back to our first question in which one's the most important, right?
Right.
So kind of for me this year, I wanted to do cross and focus on it a little bit more, and I'm a Cat 5, like just starting on it, but I wanted to focus for it and do it. So that's what my focus was.
Yeah.
And so I did a 24-hour mountain bike in June. So I ramped up to that, took a little bit of a block to do whatever I wanted to do and ride and start doing stuff. And then I worked into my intensity for cross. And then now that's, for me, that's kind of winding down.
But that worked out good for you.
Yeah,
the program
perfect.
That we wrote up
was perfect.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I think it's what's the priority and what's the big picture, and ramp up to it and then detrain a little bit, ramp up, detrain. And my example that I kind of wrote down on this question was for me personally, going back to my multi-sport stuff, whenever I was hardcore in it, I would ramp up starting in January for a longer race that was in May. And then it was at the 1st of May. And then all of May, I would do whatever I wanted for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Nice.
I wouldn't take Garmin. I would just do whatever it was. If that week I wanted to ride every day and not run at all, then that's what I did. And I would just, more importantly for my mind than not necessarily, and just keep a base fitness.
Yeah.
And then I would start July 1, and that would get me, and then I would start a legit plan for Redman, which was at the end of September, and I would build everything from July 1 to the end of September. And then after that, I would take rest of September, all of October, to do the exact same thing, to just
reset your mind.
Reset your mind. It's not necessarily your body that needs it, your mind needs it. And like Alyssa this year, she went hardcore for like 10 months. So I told her, I don't care what you do, but I don't even want to look at anything that's structured for the next, till the end of the year. Like, just go do whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter what it is.
So have fun.
Just be fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to sit on the couch for 2 weeks, just sit on the couch
and
for
somebody
2 weeks.
Like her is going to stay fit because she loves this stuff.
Right. And
she
so
loves
it could be
fitness.
Anything.
Yeah.
So the other day I saw she did a yoga class, and she did a spin class at the gym, and I saw she rode her bike, and but she hasn't run, you know, so just go do what you want to do.
Right.
Corey, who's a client I've had forever, with her, she took a really long break because of life stuff. Well, for her, coming back into it because of family obligations and things like that, for her, we're kind of doing the reverse of that. I'm like, I'm not going to give you a training plan. You just need to do something 5 to 6 days a week, whatever it is, for the next 6 to 8 weeks to build some general fitness, and then we can start structure. So I think you have to look at it. It goes down, and it needs to come back up if you're extended break. But I also think that an off season needs to be a legit off season, and people don't do that, and then it shows up in an injury the next year, or a lack of motivation, mm-hmm. or they peak too early and they can't get there because they're just kind of flat. So you need to detrain in an off season. That's the whole point of an off season.
Right.
Your fitness should get worse. You should gain a little bit of weight. You should relax. Like, that's what off season's for.
You should not stress about a workout.
No.
It should not be something where you're for like, weeks. Crap, I don't want to do this. Like, if you think like that, then don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
And I think you need weeks of that.
Yeah.
To, like, truly get to where.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I agree 100%.
So hopefully that answered Steven's question. All right, and our last question for today is I'm pretty much going to leave this one up to Brandon. It's, well, this one comes from Brandon. He says.
I wrote it to myself.
You should.
I want to know this answer.
I would love to see you be a triathlete. I'm a triathlete and new to mountain biking. What tips for carrying speed on a mountain bike? What are the best technique, drills, practice sessions for getting better on the trail?
Well, I mean, the honest to God, the best way to get better on the trail is to ride the trail, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds pretty stupid, mm-hmm. you know, but the only way to get good is to ride the trail because, like, 90% of mountain biking and mountain bike racing has to do with finesse, and only 10% of it has to do with fitness, right? You could stack Cat 1 pro crit racers that have never touched a mountain bike against some Cat 2 mountain bikers that are good on our local trails, and the crit racers will get waxed every time, dude.
Right. Because I didn't used to understand that. I used to be like, why is that? How? And now that I do it, it's yeah, ridiculous.
It has not. And guys, you would think that you would be better than, right?
Mm-hmm.
That like come out and they're like, and you're like, man, you see that and you're like, whoa, these guys can ride pretty good. And it makes you respect like how athletic they are, right? Like our buddy Tony Stewart.
Yeah.
You know, like when he first got on a mountain bike, I was like, dang, he's actually pretty good, but he's got like a collegiate football career that he had, you know,
right.
he played college ball. Yeah, he's just super athletic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then other guys that I think, I'm like, yeah, I'll meet you out at the trail. It's like, you know, I roll pretty fast laps at Bluff, and I'm like, yeah, if you can break a 20-minute lap at Bluff, you're rolling pretty good. So mm-hmm. I'll meet people and be like, yeah, we'll roll like a 21-minute lap, and then we end up rolling like a 28-minute lap. And I'm like, are you even riding? You know what I mean?
They're
like,
dying.
Right, and they're dying. And I'm like, dude, what the crap? So anyways, to answer Brandon's question, it's all about practice. I think with mountain biking, you get scared because there's a lot going on. You're like, oh, there's rocks on the trail. I could tag my pedal. Yeah, that's fair enough. You know, mm-hmm. there's trees coming up. I could hit this tree. Okay.
You're going to.
I get that. Yeah, you're going to hit that. I think what most people need to do is commit to what they're doing. Focus on the trail. You always look 10 to 15 to 20 foot in front of you, right? So, like, before you get to that little rock garden, you already know how you're going to enter it because you looked at it. You already saw it.
You're not looking at your front wheel. Because that's what I did when I started. You just looked right in front of you.
Never looking at your front wheel.
Yeah, because you just don't want to hit what's right in front of you as a newbie.
Right, but you get past that and you start riding faster, and then you start learning, okay, well, there's like a million trees at Bluff, but there's only like 100 of them that are a problem. And really, if you want to break it down, there's only like 10 of them that are kind of a problem.
Right.
So you just kind of focus on not hitting those 10 and don't really give a crap about the other ones.
And if you look at that tree,
You're going to hit that tree. Right.
Yeah.
Right,
don't look at that rock. Yep. Don't look at that edge.
Yeah. They teach you that when you get your motorcycle license. They're like, whichever way you're looking, that's where this bike's going to go.
Yep.
It's the same thing
true.
On a bicycle. Yep. So wherever you put your front wheel, wherever you're looking down the trail, you're gonna send it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make that be in a positive way by staying on the trail and ripping it super fast and going as fast as you can. Right.
Yep.
And kind of the other thing with mountain biking, because it's such a finesse sport, instead of a fitness sport, you kind of have to realize that certain sections of trail, they have a speed limit. You can only go so fast on some trails. Like, mm-hmm. it's impossible to go faster. Like, you couldn't hit these tight switchbacks any faster.
Right.
So once you start to figure out how a trail rides, mm-hmm. right, then you figure out how to hit that as efficient as possible, right, to where your heart rate's lower and you're basically recovering through these hard sections.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go hard where you need to go hard.
Right.
And you can go easy where you need to go easy, but accumulatively, you're going extremely fast the whole time.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But fast and hard don't necessarily correlate.
Not stomping out of every corner.
Exactly. You don't have to, because if you're at Bluff and you're stomping out of every corner, you're just going to hit your brakes a little bit sooner to the next corner. Right. But if you focus on flow, and you focus on riding and riding the trail in front of you, I'll go out there sometimes, I won't even touch my brakes. That'll be my goal for the day. You go to Bluff, don't touch your brakes.
You just ride slow enough that you're practicing a skill.
It's not even slow, it's like 20-minute lap.
Yeah, that's not normal though.
Right, but I'm just saying. Right.
But you're riding at a speed that you're comfortable with in the corners.
Absolutely.
And then build up from that.
Right. You, like, once you learn how a corner rides, you know, you enter this corner to the inside and you float to the outside, right? You pedal up until the point where you get to the corner and then maybe stop pedaling for a second and then you start pedaling out of the corner. Once you figure out how to take one corner, you can take 1,000 corners like that, right?
So is there any like things that you could do like in the yard or in an open field or something that to help you with that cornering skill?
Man, you know, so the number one thing I see people doing wrong on mountain bikes is, well, this is probably like a couple of things in one thing. So they stand up and sprint too much, which turns into hitting their brakes too much, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't pedal enough. And when they are pedaling, they're always pedaling too hard of a gear. Oh. So when I coach people and when I do my one-on-one privates and I go out to the trail, I'm like, okay, you hit this lap and we're going to time it. I'm going to take 2 minutes off your time. I'm going to show you how to hit it faster. I'm going to show you how to hit it easier, right? Because that's the ultimate goal. You want to utilize this trail like it's a pump track. Mm-hmm. If you've ever watched anybody ride a pump track, you don't pedal. Okay. So you don't pedal, but yet you're going extremely fast and you're pumping and flowing. Well, that's how you need to learn how to ride mountain bike trails, right? Mm-hmm. And by doing that, keeping your heart rate, you know, your heart rate might be high, but that doesn't mean you're going like super hard. It just might be high. If your heart rate's actually high, that's a good thing because you're moving more blood.
Right.
You're recovering better, right? Mm-hmm. But pedaling in an easier gear than you need to be in and hitting your brakes less and just flowing the trail and learning how to ride the trail and finding all the natural transition, all the natural pump, all the natural flow. I mean, you literally can build speed out of a corner by hitting the right apex of the corner to progressively build speed out of the corner. And then you just get back on your pedal and you're just pedaling easy. And dude, you might be going 18 miles an hour on this trail and you're going faster than everybody, but you're going way easier than everybody because you're not just stop, start.
It's not sprint.
You're not sprinting and you're not hitting your brakes.
And that's a total rookie move. And that's something that I used to do really bad. And it's getting better, but it's still something that you have to, you know, when this question, I'd look back at where I was a year ago compared to now. And it was same thing. I would ride hard into the corner, lock it up, sprint out.
Right.
So maybe scrubbing speed a little bit before the corner and then flowing through it.
Yeah.
And so you're carrying a little bit more. You're just slowing down a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And then
that's the exact way. That's the only time you ever break.
Yeah. Is before the corner.
Right before the corner.
And looking through the corner.
Looking 100% looking through the corner. Yeah. That's like the best advice right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And I think, well, duh. And then I think I need to play.
That's the best advice you've ever given me, right?
That's
there.
Probably true. playing in the backyard, like as a kid, I need to do that more because I think, and Bunny Hop Wizard, he's the most perfect example. The kid's on his bike nonstop, and the skills that he has is stupid just because he goes and plays. He's a kid.
And now he's like got all these other Tulsa kids, and they're like little rippers, like Bunny Hop and everything.
Everything.
So
I just play.
I would say that. I would say on one of your recovery days for the week, you go out and do a recovery ride, go dork around on your mountain bike, learn how to ride wheelies, learn how to do track stands. Just go find some technical stuff, learn how to ride upstairs, learn how to ride downstairs, like learn all this fun stuff that you don't ever do because 99% of the time you just load your bike up on your car, drive to the trail, unload it, don't warm up, try to haul ass on the trail and you're not going very good because you didn't warm up and then you're done.
And
you don't learn skill that way. No. All you learn how to do is
ride hard
on a trail where you probably don't even have to ride hard to go fast.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So practice in all different ways, shapes, and form.
Yeah.
Go have fun on your bike, and you'll get better at all of it because you're mixing it up, having fun on your bike.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to the park by my house, and I rode like the curb that's out in the middle of the park.
Cool.
I just try to stay balanced on that, and then I tried track stands, and then I tried to go around these trees really tight. And I tried popping wheelie, and that ended poorly like 3 times, and so I quit that.
Well, you didn't try hard enough.
Oh, no. I tried too hard. It just ejected me off the back, so... But I think that's a good place to start for our first Ask the Coaches podcast.
Are we done?
We're done. I'm done.
I think I've had too much coffee today. It's 4:00.
Well, I brought you a triple Americano, and you had one when you got out of the car.
Can I save that for tomorrow and reheat it?
Sure.
I think I'll probably do that.
Why not?
Because I need some water and a nap.
You're not sleeping till tomorrow.
I don't think I'm sleeping at all. Yeah.
But hopefully people got something out of this and they can send us more questions, and we'll do this again maybe in a couple weeks.
Sounds good, buddy.
Awesome. Thanks, bud.
Thanks.